Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Unlike a lot of radio and TV personalities, David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation, only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. And now, brace yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, here comes the unfiltered truth about money, investing, and retirement planning from a man who will give it to you straight. No bias and no spin. Here he is, David Holland.
And welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. We have a lot to do today, so let's get right to it, Lisa.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
And Scott, let's get right to it. Tell me about Thursday's trade.
I can always tell when you're excited about your guests because it's just, I might as well not even sit down.
No, that's not true.
Thursday's trade was terrific. The Dow up 155 points, NASDAQ up 17, S&P up 14. Those are strong numbers.
That's why I'm excited.
Yeah, there's no real strength behind it. We'll talk about it in a second. Looking at other markets, gold up a little bit, up $6. Oil, a pretty strong day for oil on Thursday, up $1.60 to $84.23 on the West Texas. Tens mostly flat at 1.632, and a little bit of a push on your euro trade at 1.26 to the dollar. But most of the reason for the push behind stocks wasn't anything really fundamentally positive, such as good jobs or something of that nature. It was basically the European central banks came out and said, you know, if this election this weekend goes really, really bad wrong, we will provide whatever liquidity to the markets that we need. So basically all it was is a short-term
reassurance,
a short-term avoidance of what could have potentially been a real disaster next week.
See, I thought all the excitement was that I'm going to be speaking next week at the New Smyrna Library on Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I have not heard that mentioned in the analyst community.
Well, I'm excited to do that. But one other quick piece of news I'm horning in on your time here is Stanford.
Alan Stanford?
He got 110 years in his $7 billion swindle.
Yeah, formerly known as Alan Stanford, currently known as inmate number 726538.
Not good. He's going away for a long time.
And still maintains his innocence.
Yeah, I didn't do it. Yeah. I had the money, but the feds came in and messed it up.
Yeah, really psychopathic behavior, I think.
All right. Well, what else you have in terms of psychopathic behavior in the market?
A couple of other things. Moody's cut Spanish's government rating by 3 notches. That was after the close on Wednesday, from A-3 to Baa-3. 3 notches is a lot. And on that news, Spanish bond yields rose pretty strongly. Italian bond yields rose pretty strongly. The Fed next week is holding their 2-day monetary policy, so we'll be watching that pretty closely. There was some rumors that came out on Thursday that there was going to be an emergency meeting of the G7 to be held somewhere in Mexico next week. Markets got kind of excited about that, but then it turned out that there really wasn't much behind it.
Hmm.
And then in corporate news, grocery store Kroger, which I don't think we have around here, do we?
We used to. That's actually the first job I had getting while I was in high school.
Is that right?
Yeah, Kroger. It was a Super X Food and Drug on Granada Boulevard for our local listeners. And it was a Kroger store.
Well, Kroger announced very solid earnings on Thursday's trade. A good move for them there. And Nokia is the BlackBerry of this year. Nokia just cannot get out of their own way. They announced that they are going to cut another 10,000 jobs globally. Warned that second quarter loss would be larger than expected. You know, they were on the front edge of those, what they used to call the clamshell phones, but they just did not keep up.
I like those phones. I thought they were cool.
Yeah, well, they're passe now. And on the economic front, weekly jobless claims rose 6,000 to a seasonally adjusted 386,000. Pretty high there. Consumer prices dipped 0.3%. That's stripping out oil and food. So you will start to hear concerns about deflation coming up.
Yeah, my question as you were citing those numbers is, where's the momentum?
The only momentum in the markets right now, and the only reason we're having a good week this week, are these, you know, they used to talk about the Bernanke put. Now it's the European Central Bankers put, which basically says you might as well take as much risk as you can get your hands on, because there's no real bottom process the European central banks are not going to allow it. Now, we thought that last year with the Bernanke put, and then we saw what happened in September, so it's kind of a fallacy. But it definitely is giving the markets some sense of security that they didn't have, you know, maybe a month or two ago.
So it's not that things are going great or that all of a sudden you've got wonderful job numbers. It's none of that. It's no momentum. The economy is not turning around and running and sprinting down the road. It is the maybe backing up or pushing back of some of this bad stuff that's just, and there's the chance that the banks will be stimulative and their monetary policy is going to be stimulating the economy. Or
yeah, but I mean, you know, you're right in all cases. However, if you look a little bit further down the road, one of the reasons Moody's cut their rating on the Spanish government was because they said, you know, all this bailout money is just going to make their debt problem worse. It's not a solution.
It's not creating revenue. It's not creating taxes.
Yeah,
it's
it makes the problem worse. It just makes it worse later.
I see. So as you said, it's a short-term boost.
Yeah, there still has to be. It's just like a household. You can only run in the deficit for so long before, you know, you lose the house or the car or something.
Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. We're going to take a quick break. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
And we'll be right back with our guest.
Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Bright House Channel 49.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have a special treat. I know I've been giving you guests, and they have been interesting and dynamic and very related to the financial discussions we have often on the program. This one's going to be really interesting. So whatever you had planned, the next 30 minutes, you've got to stay tuned. We have on the line with us Robert Mazur, president of Chase & Associates, an investigative agency that works with law firms and major corporations in the United States. He's an author. And the author is My Secret Life Inside the Dirty Banks Behind Pablo Escobar's Medellin Cartel. That's a mouthful. Robert, you're there?
I am. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm super excited to have you on. Again, you and I talked before I had you on the program, and I told you we do a lot of talk about financial discussions and things going on, but your topic is just so fascinating. You've seen the inside, well, you've seen corruption on the inside of some of our most highly regarded financial institutions.
Yeah, that's true. I had the opportunity to serve as a federal agent for 27 years.
Wow.
And during that time, about 20 years, I devoted toward investigating international drug trafficking and drug trafficking and money laundering organizations. And as we did those typically historically with the wiretaps and informants and that type of thing, but we ultimately came to the conclusion that really the best way to identify those involved in command and control in those organizations and the highest levels of money laundering would be to use a long-term undercover technique and have one of our own agents infiltrate the drug world as a money launderer and work their way up. And so it all began with first volunteering for that position, because a long-term undercover position is a volunteer position. You don't get drafted into that. And then I went through undercover schools, and I was mentored by some of, I think, the best long-term undercovers that went before me, including Joe Pistone, the former FBI agent who the book and movie Donnie Brasco is based upon, and psychologists who participate with trainers in the vetting of candidates who think they want to do this crazy thing and try to live a double life for years on end, because there are unbelievable pressures both psychologically and physically that you endure during that process. And if you're, there are certain techniques, not techniques, but characteristics that they look for in individuals to decide whether or not they want them to try to go through this. And to put it in a nutshell, it's really looking for people who have an internal definition of right and wrong that's very clear, black and white, not a lot of gray area, not rationalizing things. And I guess I had that. So I got through that program. I spent about a year and a half putting together one of the more sophisticated fronts used in money laundering, I think. It was an identity fully verifiable, and I was embedded in some real businesses, a finance company in Florida, a mortgage brokerage business, and an air charter service with a private jet. We had a jewelry chain with 70 locations on the East Coast, and even a brokerage firm with a seat on the New York Stock Exchange, all of which really came to us through either informants or concerned citizens who agreed to embed me in their companies. And so I portrayed the role of a mob-connected businessman, corrupt businessman, out of New York and Florida. I really, in the first 6 months, wouldn't come out of the shadows with people within the Medellin cartel, where we had informants. I helped to open up accounts, and I had them continually say, well, he doesn't want to meet anybody. And eventually, after about 6 months, they were banging on the door to meet me, and I got the opportunity to meet money brokers. And at some stage, maybe we can talk about the money brokerage business, the black money market business, because it is a business, and it operates in different black markets all around the world. It's a method, it's a place where, quote, legitimate importers often go to buy literally hundreds of billions of dollars in a year all around the globe. And so I dealt with some money brokers, and the story to them was that I had a family in New York for whom I did this type of thing. They'd given me authorization to explore the markets in Latin America, and I was happy to consider working with them, but I needed to do it my way. And my way involved not just taking money and passing it on, but it also had to involve a percentage of the money being invested. And so I became a person who not only passed money on, but managed money. And of course, if you're going to manage money for people by putting it into investments of some sort, and when I say investments, I mean financing the construction for example, a downtown LA condo complex, putting capital into businesses that were privately held businesses that were operating, that were really controlled by them. CDs, simple things like that, because I'm not a stock broker. But anyway, so in doing that, it begs the authority to be able to sit down and speak with the owners of the money, which I ultimately did. And
I see.
I dealt directly with Pablo Escobar's principal consigliere, a lawyer out of Medellin, and a number of high-ranking people, and then became a conduit to what was the seventh largest privately held bank in the world, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, and dealt with the senior executives of that bank who were knowingly and willingly and anxiously involved in handling as much underground money as they could get their hands on.
Robert, several things. Okay. Number one, fascinating. But I want to say this, and I mean it very sincerely. Thank you for the service to our country. That is enormous. And the sacrifice you've made to do that. So thank you for what you've done. I mean, I know that people are going to want to get a copy of this story. I've got just a chance to kind of get into some of it. And I can't wait to read the whole book. The website for Robert Mazur's book is the-infiltrator.com. And the book, again, is My Secret Life Inside the Dirty Banks Behind Pablo Escobar's Medellin Cartel. Robert, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we'll get into some of the more details of what your story is all about. Hold on right there.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
If you're just joining us, I have Robert Mazur on the line with us, president of Chase & Associates, and he is a 27-year veteran federal agent, and you were an infiltrator, Robert, right?
That's true. Yeah, I got the opportunity to work for about 5 years in long-term undercover.
Wow.
Dealing with leaders of criminal organizations and senior executives of international banks and other businesses that were knowingly involved in laundering.
This is it's just extraordinary, your story. And so you were instrumental, from what I understand from reading your bio, you were instrumental in bringing down, close to 100 high-level drug traffickers, as well as some of these bank executives, that, like, as you said, that were anxious and willing to participate in this laundering of money?
That's true. Yes.
Wow. And we just saw, this call is very timely. We just saw not long ago a big report came out in the Wall Street Journal, ING, Inc., $600-some-odd million fine for essentially moving money through our financial system for Iranian and another country.
Cuba.
I mean, so this does, it happens. You've seen it. And what do you make of that for us lay people, you know, everyday citizens, so to speak? What do you think that means for us?
Well, I wrote a paper that was just published this past month in a money laundering journal and presented it through Cambridge, actually, where I presented on it. And the thesis really was that there is a segment of the international banking and business community that knowingly solicits funds from the underworld and profits from it. And I build my thesis not just on the personal experiences that I had in long-term undercover, but I also had the opportunity, a very valuable opportunity, to debrief the convicted bank officers of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International.
Wow.
And what they told me was, first of all, their argument was, I don't understand why you're picking on us. We're not doing anything that the rest of the international banking community isn't doing.
Well, that's comforting.
Yeah. what they pointed out was, they said, you know, we didn't start our careers with BCCI. You know, some of us came from Bank of America, Royal Bank of Canada, many others. And we really just took what we thought were the best of the best techniques and applied it to a business that all international banks, according to them, pursue, and that is the marketing of what they called flight capital. And I said, you know, well, give me, I know what flight capital is, but give me your definition. And their definition was money seeking secrecy from governments. It can come from drug trafficking, it can come from arms dealing, the evasion of customs duties, the evasion of taxes, the pilfering of treasuries, it can come from trying to deal with sanctioned nations and therefore disguising and committing criminal offenses to disguise the movement of funds to enemy governments. All of that, and even moving money for intelligence agencies, all have that same need. And so they have a protocol of methods that they use in order to satisfy the needs of customers that have that type of money. And when you look at the last 5 or 6 years of the just continuous history of banks that have been found to be involved in handling this type of money and admitting criminal offenses, it's a scary thought, because we really, our economy is based upon the soundness of our financial institutions.
Absolutely.
And when you take a look at this and how it could undermine that, it really affects all of us, because it reduces the confidence that others have in the U.S. economy. And then that trickles down into ultimately the type of recession or depression type conditions that exist, because people aren't moving money in that in that regard. But U.S. dollar is by far the universally accepted money, not just in the underworld, but also in the real world. And that really is what I think keeps our dollar as competitive. I know we suffer at times here and there, but a lot of people use the dollar in order to trade, and that has a very big economic impact on us. But if you look at the last couple of cases, and I'll give you an example, March of 2010, just like Ing, Wachovia Bank entered into a deferred prosecution with the government. I think these deferred prosecutions are legalese for a slap on the wrist. Basically, what happens is they say, yep, you got me. I did commit a criminal offense. The information or indictment that states those charges is put in abeyance. All they have to do is admit within a deferred prosecution that they did commit a criminal offense. They have to allow the government to monitor their transactions for the next 12 months to make sure that they have they're no longer doing this. Yep. And then they have to pay a fine. And in the case of Wachovia, what their deferred prosecution admits is that they intentionally did not do due diligence with regard to the monies that they were accepting out of Mexico, $400 billion in U.S. dollar deposits over the period of 2004 to 2007.
And what was the fine?
Fine was 2% of their profits. $160 million was their fine. But, you know, among the services that they provided to these account holders, now these are Mexican-based account holders, their correspondent relationships with houses of exchange, casas de cambio. Those are businesses that the Treasury has sent notices to every financial institution on this planet that it is the highest risk type of account that you can get involved in and what you should and need to be doing in order to make sure you're not taking tainted funds. Well, not only did they intentionally not do that, among the services, they physically brought $14 billion back into the United States. And I say back because I used to be in an undercover capacity, a money launderer. I used to, our group used to pick up at times as much as $2 million at a time.
Wow.
On the corners of the major cities in our country. At little places like little bodegas that were grocery stores in very not nasty parts of town, or even just meeting somebody with a beat up car in a McDonald's that in the trunk of the car was $2 million sitting there. Now that money is normally in 5s, 10s, and 20s. In because of the domestic bank diligence with regard to reporting currency transactions over 10,000, suspicious activity reports, those types of things. It's very, there's a big concern by the foreign owners of that money, drug dealers and their organizations, to try to launder it within the borders of the United States. They always look for, they prefer to deal with international banks because they're involved in cross-border transactions, easier to hide it. And what has been happening in the recent past is the physical smuggling of currency. I'm talking about tens of billions of dollars being smuggled across our poorest border to the south, taken to Mexico and other countries in Latin America, and propped up to try to make it look legal by pushing it through these houses of exchange.
Yeah.
$14 billion, if that money that was brought back by Wachovia were in $20 bills, and I guarantee you it was in 5, 10s, and 20s, but if it was in 20s, it was 725 tons.
God bless. Who did
they think they were getting 725 tons of money from? And $400 billion represents one-third of the gross national product of Mexico for an entire year. How could they possibly, and that, now that's a country with a per capita income of $4,000 per person, and most of that is generated in Mexican pesos. So how does this $400 billion in U.S. dollars magically appear in a country that's known to be the most active country sending drugs, illegal drugs into the United States? How's that not recognized by that bank?
That's extraordinary, Robert. Robert, let me take a quick break. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us, this is just, it's fascinating stuff. Robert Mazur, president of Chase & Associates, and he's the author of The Infiltrator, My Secret Life Inside the Dirty Banks Behind Pablo Escobar's Medellin Cartel. And the website is the-infiltrator.com. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's fascinating stuff. And again, if you're just joining us, Robert Mazur, president of Chase & Associates and the author of The Infiltrator, My Secret Life Inside the Dirty Banks Behind Pablo Escobar's Medellin Cartel. Say that 10 times fast. The website is the-infiltrator.com. Robert's 27 years as a special agent and undercover, deep operative. Fascinating, Robert. The dollar amounts you're talking about, that this black money market, this literally bringing across, how many tons did you say of cash was it?
Oh, and in that instance, $14 billion, if it was 20s, would have weighed 725 tons.
That's just, I mean, I'm trying to get my mind around that. And is this a byproduct of our North American Free Trade Agreement? These semi-tractor trailer trucks full of cash?
It's unfortunately a byproduct of the fact that we have a population in our nation that is number one with the insatiable appetite for illegal drugs.
Yeah.
$65 billion a year is the credible number that one can tack to how much is spent in this country every single year on illegal drugs. And the best, most accurate estimates with regard to global revenue annually is about $420 billion that came out in a UN report in 2011. They do one every year, and it's been the same number for quite some time. That was an interesting study that your listeners can Google. United Nations report, October 2011. It's United Nations on Drugs and Crime, and in their report, they define the amount of money that they believe is in the markets every single year from illegal activity, and pinned it at $2.1 trillion. So it's a massive amount of money that unfortunately gets marketed by a lot of financial institutions. We spoke briefly about the Wachovia case, but mm-hmm. I just want to go through a list of shame so that your listeners get a feel for how common it is that these banks get involved in committing criminal offenses in moving money.
Okay, go ahead.
You can go with starting off with Bank Atlantic in April of 2006, paid a $20 million fine, admitted it just like Wachovia in a deferred prosecution criminal offense. August of 2011, Ocean Bank paid an $11 million fine, same thing. American Express Bank International, 2007, forfeited $55 million, same thing, deferred prosecution, admitted criminal offense. Union Bank of California in San Diego, September of 2007, $21.6 million fine. Now we move into some of the bigger banks that were involved in illegally sending money to sanctioned nations. Lloyd's in January of 2009, $350 million fine. You've got Credit Suisse in February of 2011 with four officers who were charged. Credit Suisse in December of 2009, $536 million fine for stripping wire transfers and to send money to sanctioned nations. ABN AMRO, May of 2010, $500 million fine. Barclays, August of 2010, $298 million fine. Add to that Ing with the $619 million fine, and that doesn't even begin to contemplate what's going on in the grand jury in New York as we speak in the criminal investigation of HSBC Bank, their New York office, that recently, in May, an article came out very detailed about what agencies are focused on them, the Justice Department, two U.S. Attorney's Office, the Federal Reserve, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, Manhattan DA's office, and others, for a number of things. One, you know, you're supposed to have these compliance programs, and they're supposed to be effective. But what they believe they have the proof of was an intentional institutional plan to hire incompetent people to lead the compliance department so that they would be able to deal in this kind of money and not have to worry about being shunned away from it by a competent compliance department, among other things.
Good grief.
HSBC was repatriating into the United States, and it's called a bulk cash note business. And the bulk cash note business that the New York office of HSBC was running is responsible for bringing back roughly $40 billion a year from Latin America and nations in North Africa. Why is that important? Because if you know the drug world, you know that the nations in North Africa, like Mali, Togo, Benin, Ghana, Nigeria, are all collectively the Mexico for the Colombian traffickers in their routes of cocaine into Europe. That's the transshipment points. That's where the money is exchanged for the drugs. That's where the cash gets collected and often moved into Lebanon, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, and all of these other countries that do not have laws of transparency, so you can't follow the money. And now HSBC markets those areas, brings back $40 billion a year, and by their own records, profits to a tune of about $160 million a year from that business.
Robert, it's astounding information, and I'm going to have you come back for another show. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had Robert Mazur on our program today, president of Chase & Associates. The book is The Infiltrator, My Secret Life Inside the Dirty Banks Behind Pablo Escobar's Medellin Cartel. The website is the-infiltrator.com. Robert, thank you so much for all of this, and we will be talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.